Welcome into K-State Online. I am Mason Voth. That is Drew Galloway, and we are here on a Tuesday as K-State has completed Paradise Jam, and they went 2-1. That means they're 4-2 overall. Certainly didn't think that we would get any answers in a good way to what K-State might do this season, but there was certainly a world in which you felt worse about K-State coming out of it, and I think that's where most people probably are, where you can give them one slip up against LSU, who's, again, I don't think they're going to be very good this year, but they're a power conference team, so it comes across better than some. But people get really, really out on you when you've already looked like crap through what going into it. It was five games, and K-State then loses to Liberty in the semifinals of Paradise Jam, and they have to settle for third place. So we'll talk a little bit about what went down there, how everything is looking moving forward and how everybody should feel about it and everything else going. Then we'll have some football stuff at the end to kind of set the stage as Farmageddon week is here and we prepare for that. But before we do that, a reminder for everybody that the holiday season, I think it's officially here. Thanksgiving is on Thursday. So that is the kickoff of the holiday season. The second they get those balloons inflated and in the air for the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, that's when the holiday season begins. And if you want to be the star of the holiday season at your family Christmas, you know, grandma's always trying to come through and step up and she's really wanting to deliver. But if you want to be better than your grandma this year in gift giving, means you've got one option. And that is to celebrate the holiday season by finding the perfect gift for the Cats fan in your life. And you can give your friends and family the trip of a lifetime this year. Let them go see the Wildcats take on the Cyclones in the 2025 Aer Lingus College Football Classic in Dublin, Ireland. Visit cats2ireland.com for information on official travel and hospitality packages. That's cats, the number 2ireland.com. Get on it now. Get them that gift. They'll be stunned. They'll open it up and like, oh my goodness. Unless it's like a really young person that's like 8 years old and they're going over to Ireland and like, oh, this is a Christmas gift I can't use immediately, then you're a loser to them. But anybody probably that's double digits in age will thank you forever, and you'll be a hero. So go win the holiday season with Aer Lingus and cats2ireland.com.
So you're saying that holiday season is like officially here because it's almost Thanksgiving. So does this mean that your guys' house isn't like decorated for Christmas yet? Or is this like when does that happen for you?
It's already been done for the most part. I mean, there are Christmas trees up, some decorations out. I don't know. I'm pretty particular about stuff. I don't like going overboard. So, you know, one year, I think it was maybe our first year in the house, my wife put up the Christmas stuff on Halloween. I can vividly remember our
Christmas stuff this year has been up pre-Halloween. It was like 3 days before Halloween.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm like, we can't really do that. Or then around certain holidays, like my wife is still trying to put my daughter in clothes with stuff on it. And I was like, okay, hard stop. We're not putting her in any Halloween themed shirts before it gets to October. And then no, she cannot wear the bluey Halloween shirt on November 1st. It is not Halloween anymore. Like Halloween is a hard cutoff that needs to be followed. So I don't know. I'm a little different on that. She doesn't get it, but I think there are a lot of men that are out there that probably understand it a little bit more, where they're just wired in a way that nobody's actually going to judge you for it because they don't care, but I think they will. And in my head, I go, yeah, I can't do that. I'm not going to be the guy that's roaming around with a kid rocking Valentine's Day gear in March or whatever. Just not going to happen. St. Patrick's Day, boom, it's over on March, whatever. So March 17th, I guess. Here's a question for you. How old were you when you learned that Valentine's Day is on the same day every year and is not just always on a Thursday?
Like 6 or 7. I felt like that was common knowledge when we were.
I don't know what age I was, but I do know for the longest time I was just like, yeah, Valentine's Day feels like a Thursday holiday, but really it's just Easter and Thanksgiving are basically the only ones that's like, nah, it's got to be on a Sunday and a Thursday. So, here's another one. Holiday season fun for you. The song "I Saw Mommy Kissing Santa Claus." How old were you when you realized that Santa Claus in this song is actually the dad?
Oh, like 10 or 11. Like that was like an older one. Because the before, like, that's a song that you're like, that just feels very weird.
Yeah, there's a lot of Christmas songs that are just kind of weird in nature. So you think to yourself, you're like, oh, yeah, I guess it's just a weird song. I was a senior in college. I was doing, to make a quick buck, I was doing the morning show at the student radio station, which, I mean, shout out Wildcat 91.9 KSDB, but it was a bit of a scam that we were running, getting money from the state of Kansas for doing that in the morning. I can't believe that it was actually something they paid us to do. But, you know, you go in there 2 hours every morning and mess around or whatever. And so we were playing Christmas songs and that song came on. And I, for the longest time, thought that it was like, it was Santa Claus. What are you going to do? And then shout out Adam Cook, who I was hosting with. He explained it to me. No, the dad is Santa Claus. And he couldn't believe that I didn't put that together. But I guess that just goes to show that I really have the holiday spirit in me. And I still believe. So I guess sue me for thinking Santa Claus might be real, people. I don't know, but one thing that I wish was real, Drew, I wish this was a real good basketball team right now for
K-State.
And I don't think it is. There have been flashes. I would say that three of the six halves of basketball that got played in the Virgin Islands, you could talk yourself into saying those were good halves of basketball. They started off strong enough against George Washington. They struggled a little bit in the second half, but they kind of took their foot off the gas. But it was encouraging that they were able to kind of find it again and kind of shift into gear. There was nothing good about what happened in the Liberty game. And then really it wasn't until the second half and late second half against Longwood that you feel good about what K-State did. So because this is probably still going to be pretty negative, it seems like anything involving K-State basketball over the last two seasons now is – what positives can you take away from K-State's experience in the Virgin Islands?
I think that the number one positive that you can really take away from Paradise Jam, and really, it wasn't looking like it was there was going to be many positives until probably you were a little bit more negative than I was. I was going to say like probably the five minute mark of the first half yesterday, and then the rest of the second half. I was just Coleman Hawkins coming to life. You're like, that was the Coleman Hawkins that we, I don't want to say like anticipated, because he shot the ball so well. I think he shot 70% from the field and hit four threes, but that's the Coleman Hawkins that K-State needs. And his ability to be a facilitator, be a playmaker, be a shot maker, and lead the team in rebounds. Like, that was an A game from Coleman Hawkins. And to see him kind of talk after the game with the ESPN Plus crew, who was just a trip to listen to
they always are. I mean, where the hell was Jess Settles this weekend? Why couldn't we have gotten him back to the islands?
But hearing him talk to the ESPN Plus crew and like apologizing to K-State fans for how he's played and felt like he was just kind of in his own head, I feel like that's a step in the right direction, because this team is going to go how Doug McDaniel and Coleman Hawkins go. I wrote that in instant takeaways against Liberty, that you could tell things were going to be kind of on the sloppier and bad side when you didn't really get a consistent Doug McDaniel. You got a pretty consistent Doug McDaniel for the second half against Longwood, and a consistent Coleman Hawkins from about the 5 minute mark in the first half throughout the rest of the game. And I think that that's kind of where this season is going to go. It's going to be, okay, can these two really take over? Because at K-State's best, they're going to have four or five, maybe even six players in double figures scoring wise, but they're going to need those two to really carry them and carry the weight of the load, because they are K-State's two most talented players. So they're going to need to be the ones that take and make the most amount of shots.
Yeah, I think Coleman Hawkins is the number one positive to take away from what took place in the Virgin Islands. His performance, number one, you got over three games, a pretty consistent look. He shot 50% from three. Now, most of it was from a really good shooting day yesterday in the finale against Longwood, but that's how percentages work. You're going to have some bad days, some okay days, and some really great ones, and it's going to all average out, and it'll tell us who you are. Over 3 days, Coleman Hawkins shot 30% or 50% from three. He was in double figures throughout the entire tournament, did some good with the assists, with the rebounds, and a lot of the wow plays where it felt like K-State was in sync and made something special happen, Coleman Hawkins was involved in some way. And that's why I was never going to fully quit on Coleman Hawkins this year. Like, especially since we've talked about it, really since like the first game. He started slow last season at Illinois, and then after about five or six games, turned it on and never looked back. And now, is it a problem that it's, you know, consistently starting slow? Yeah, maybe. But you know what? If you're going to get five or six bad games over the course of a season, and most of them come in the first five or six, and then you can feel pretty confident about what you're going to get over the next 20, then I don't think it's a big deal. So it was nice to see what he put together. That was encouraging for K-State. The other one is that David Gasson, again, has taken a step forward going through an offseason. And I just think he's got the best mindset on this team right now. I think he knows how to play. I don't think there's much BS in David Gasson's life. I think it's, I'm going to be a good guy. I'm going to be a good teammate. I'm going to be a good basketball player. And he's gotten better at all three of those things, mainly the basketball side of it, though. I just feel like he's in a good spot right now. He has a little bit better of an understanding. Still some struggles on the defensive end, but this whole team struggles defensively. Now, that's where, I mean, I can't find many other positives coming out of the Virgin Islands. I mean, Doug McDaniel, you could maybe give a nod to that. It's at least encouraging. They get away from Manhattan and you spend 5 days in the Virgin Islands, basically a vacation, except you got to play some basketball in there. And a guy that is not started or not even played at times this year because of essentially disciplinary reasons or not getting it. He plays in all three games. Two of the three, he's really good, but the one that he's not good in, turns the ball over six times, doesn't score very well, is the loss to Liberty. There might be a little bit more buy-in there. There might be a little bit more of him getting it and getting involved in this thing. So that's maybe one thing to glean that from the Virgin Islands, but he's going to be a wait and see all year. The track record with Doug McDaniel is not the same as Coleman Hawkins. Like, Coleman Hawkins definitely has some oddities to him. Like, he's a kind of a quirky guy, and I think he would understand or admit that. But over his career, most of his teammates love him, and I think he may, you know, be the kind of guy that can make a coach want to pull his hair out. But at the end of the day, you go, he's a good basketball player. I want to have him on the floor. Doug McDaniel, on the other side of it, like, he's obviously gotten off to a very rough start here at K-State, and that's the other thing to compare to Hawkins, where there are some things to question about how he started his year, but he's never been kept off the floor, you know? Like, if he needed to be, that would happen. Doug McDaniel's been kept off the floor. He had the thing last year at Michigan where he wasn't able to play in road games. Like, there are other things in the Doug McDaniel files to where that's just one big old wait and see. And he's going to need to string together a handful more games where, number one, he's giving you something on the floor, but number two, he's giving you something as just a guy and a teammate, and we'll see what to make of that. But those are about the only things that I come away with in this tournament that are positive for K-State that could maybe make you feel better moving forward. The rest of it was just stuff that made me think this team's going to struggle. And they need to figure it out quick, because with two losses under their belt already to teams that aren't very good, you've got some other ones coming up that are really going to test you.
Yeah, and I'll push back a little bit on Liberty not being very good. I will say that they will probably run away with Conference USA and probably be a tournament team. But the problem with that is, and I talked about this yesterday while we were actually waiting at the football press conference with a few people, like, the problem is that K-State going into the Longwood game, and I don't even count Longwood in this, is that K-State was 0-2 against teams that are capable of beating them. And I think that is probably the more concerning thing going forward, because you look, Sunday they play Arkansas Pine Bluff. Arkansas Pine Bluff is terrible. They're not capable of beating K-State. But then you look, St. John's will be favored in that game on next Saturday. Drake is capable of beating K-State. Wichita State's capable of beating K-State. And then Cincinnati is capable of beating K-State. And you kind of just look at that as, when are they going to be able to beat a team that is capable of beating them? And right now we're kind of in a wait and see. So that's probably my number two concern, because my number one concern is by far the perimeter defense. Like, all of the guards looked lost at times when they were on the floor, on the defensive end of the floor. And that's just not going to cut the Big 12, because they are not a good enough offensive team to just say, screw it, we're just going to outscore you. Because that's just not going to be how this team works, because they're better shooting, but they're still a little bit spotty in how they've been shooting. But the guards haven't been good defensively, and because of that, the rotations have been way off, which has been leading to open threes. Liberty lit K-State up from three, and that's why they ended up winning the game Sunday night. And you just kind of see that, and that's like, okay, we thought that this would be a pretty good defensive team until they really figured out how to play offense together. But instead, this has been a pretty atrocious defensive team, and especially allowing the wide open three. Longwood yesterday didn't shoot well from three, but they had a lot of open looks.
Yeah, so here's my thing. The defense is very concerning right now. You look back at last year, K-State opponents shot 31% from three. That was 36th best in the country. So that they were not, it did not hurt them last season. But what I said all year last year, I didn't like the way that it looked. Just because shots weren't going in doesn't mean that I thought K-State was defending it correctly. And what we've seen this year is the defense around the perimeter still looks mostly the same, and teams are making them this year. K-State is allowing teams to shoot 35.5% from three this year. That's 265th in the country right now, and it burns them. And I think some of it is a lack of knowing how and where you need to be to do things. They just aren't playing smart basketball, and a lot of playing defense, yes, I mean, it helps to be more talented than the guy that you're guarding and have better physical attributes, but a lot of playing defense is about playing smart. That, more so than the offensive end, to me, has to do with how well do you understand the game. And I think K-State is struggling on that front right now. They struggled on it last year, and so it's leading to open threes. We saw, I mean, the help defense, sometimes I think K-State's overhelping, and then it seemed like the last two games at Paradise Jam, they just said, we're not going to help at all, and it led to a lot of easy layups. The other really concerning thing to me, though, and this is something that seemingly could be fixed, or if it continues, then it's not on the player, it's on the coaches, and they have to realize to be better. Brendan Hazen has no business defending guys that far beyond the three-point line, like what we saw in the Virgin Islands. I understand that there are some guys that you don't want to give a ton of space to, but at the end of the day, I would rather, I know I just talked about poor three-point defense, but there's a difference between guys finding themselves wide open and being able to catch a pass and shoot it versus, okay, yeah, I'm going to have to try and step into this or like make a move on you, and I might get some separation to get a look. Brendan Hazen doesn't have the ability to stay in front of a lot of guys. And what we saw, especially in the Liberty game and some of the Longwood game, is he would be right there up on a guy, and they're probably at least 3 feet off of the three-point line. And either the guy gets by him or something else is happening and Hazen can't catch up, and he ends up in a spot where it's leading to an easy basket. That was the concerning part to me, that I just didn't like that. And that's either on him for not knowing where he needs to be on the floor playing defense, or that's a directive from the coaching staff, and they have to realize you got to be a little bit smarter about where certain guys are. No limitations of your guys. And I think, you know, for Brendan Hazen, that's one of those that has to be monitored moving forward, and some of the others. The defense was pretty weak. The other thing that I would throw out there, I thought shot selection was terrible for the most part in a good chunk of the games, and Brendan Hazen contributed to some of that. He's in a much more expanded role than what he's been accustomed to in his career now. So he kind of has to learn through some of it. And look, I'm not telling him to stop shooting. I want the good open looks to keep going up. Even if he's shooting poorly, if it's a good look, take the shot. That's what shooters are supposed to do. He did some of that in the Mississippi Valley State game. He's really done it a lot of the games. Like, he can be a smart shooter. He understands that. What he has to get a little bit better at, and some of the other players as well, is understanding just because you feel like you're supposed to take this shot doesn't mean you need to take a shot right now. And because you have some more freedom, because a little bit more is expected of you at K-State versus wherever your last stop was, doesn't mean you have the right to take that shot. And I think he's probably been the main culprit of that. But there have been some other guys at times where you just kind of go, that is not your shot. You know, the video of Patrick Ewing a couple of years ago that went viral. And I thought Patrick Ewing was going to be a great coach because of this, where he's saying, that's not your shot. Have you ever shot that before? That's how I feel watching some of the stuff that K-State's offense is doing right now. Like, K-State should hire Patrick Ewing as an assistant just to shout that at guys sometimes. They have to get better about that, and the offense has to be put in a better spot to get some better looks to where maybe they're not feeling like they have to take shots like that a majority of the time. I really think overall coming out of this, a balance of the problems right now are on the players 50% and on the coaching 50%. Like, coaches have to carry their weight. It's on them to figure out how to make this roster work. And that's actually something that I thought they were pretty good about last year. I know a lot of people would disagree with me on that, but I've banged the drum the entire time that what they got out of last year's team was as close to as much as you could have gotten out of it given the circumstances. Now, in the moment, I didn't want anybody doing the woe is me. Oh, we didn't have Naquan. We didn't have Quez. Like, you have to learn how to play with the guys you have in that moment and make do with it. But the overall product, I thought they did it almost as well as they could have. And they also were just unlucky last year. They should have won in Texas Tech. The game got stolen from them. They could have beaten TCU at home. TCU banked in a three to win the game. They could have won at Cincinnati. Cincinnati had some luck there at the end. Like, they were in a lot of games too that they also could have won last year. They could have been in the NCAA tournament last year, and that's not even stretching for it. So I think that this staff can coach, but it is a frustrating situation that they're in right now. And so I think right now, problems 50-50, everybody's got to be better, and that has to start immediately this weekend against Arkansas Pine Bluff, because you got zero time after that with St. John's hitting you, and then you're going to take a little bit of a layoff, and then you're going to have Drake, and then you're going to have Wichita State there towards the end of December.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And then I would add my third concern, and it was something that I actually mentioned to both you and DUI during the game, especially at halftime of last night's game, was K-State is getting outscored from the free throw line at just an absurd rate in a few of these games. And like, it's because the defense hasn't been very good. And it kind of goes back to like what you said with shot selection. But K-State's free throw rate in the last two games has been 8%. That is horrible. Like, they have to find a way to get to the free throw line more, because I think that despite some of the early struggles from the free throw line, this is a pretty good free throw shooting team when you look at their career percentages. But they have to find a way to get to the line. They can't have games where they have three free throws or four free throws, or really the entire first half. I think that we feel better about it last night if K-State is able to get to the free throw line more, because they were up 8 at half while being outscored from the free throw line by like 10.
Yeah.
So you really, if they can get to the free throw line more or foul less, because that's the thing, is you can't foul a lot and also not get to the line. And K-State has been fouling a lot and not getting to the line.
And really, that's the bigger problem for K-State is, you know, where they rank in terms of the free throw attempts versus field goal attempts defensively. They're still in the top 100 in the country. So they're not even close to like where the bottom would be. I mean, it's like 29 is the free throw rate that they've allowed. If you go and look at what the worst in the country is, it's 66.8. That's Abilene Christian. So like K-State's far from that number, but it's emphasized because they are one of the worst at getting to the free throw line in college basketball. They're 259th in terms of getting to the free throw line right now. So that's really where it amplifies, is that they can't get there. But I will say, they do need to be better about limiting their foul situation, because we talked David Gasson playing well. Some of what's limited his time on the court has been foul trouble. And again, the number one thing that leads to fouls is bad defense. And so I think it all kind of ties back into one another.
Oh, no, I agree. And it's just like kind of what I said too, with it ties into shot selection too. If you're not getting into the lane more, and Casey really hasn't made like a concerted effort outside of that second half against Mississippi Valley State, where we really saw them work it inside and get into the lane and get to the free throw line. That's been about the only time that they have really dominated the paint in a game. And that just leads to more free throws, because it will rarely get called fouls on jump shots. Like, that's just going to be how it goes.
Yep. All right. One other thing that's a big part of this conversation is the NIL transfer portal era and how heavily that plays into this. Obviously, K-State's been accustomed to the transfer side of this for a while now. I mean, you even go back to Bruce Weber's last team here. A majority of the contributing players on that team outside of Nigel Pack were transfers. Marquise Noel, Ish Massoud, Mark Smith. And then year one for Jerome Tang, there were only two guys that were left, and Keontae Johnson and Desi Sills and a bunch of other guys played a big role. And then last year, obviously, outside of Cam Carter, who was a transfer at one point, you were relying on Tyler Perry and Arthur Kaluma, who came in. How much of the frustration that is directed towards this team is amplified because of the NIL and portal stuff, as opposed to if it was natural born Wildcats, essentially? You know, they get their birthright citizenship as a K-Stater because they came as a true freshman and they were here for a couple of years. Like, how much of that plays into why people are very frustrated with this team? Like, and look, people should probably be upset regardless. I don't want people to think I'm just saying, well, this is only because of this or that. People should be pissed off how this team's played. They should not be a two-loss team right now. They should be better than that. But I think the anger is amplified because of the other stuff that plays into how you construct a roster now.
In terms of the portal stuff, I don't necessarily think that plays like a huge role into it. But I think that the NIL stuff probably does. I mean, we talked a little bit after LSU and how K-State was kind of the joke of college basketball after they lost to LSU, because their team saying K-State paid how much for this roster to get beat by the 14th ranked or the team in 14th in the SEC. And it happened again after they lost to Liberty. So I think that that's going to, that definitely amplifies it. And I think that's where some of the angst with Coleman Hawkins came from, to be honest with you, because everybody kind of saw that number that was thrown out and was like, whoa, he's only averaging like 7 or 8 points. And then you look back and it's like, he's never been a huge scorer. And that's why we've kind of came on here and talked about that multiple times now. But I think that really amplifies it, because when you have people like Jeff Goodman saying K-State is one of the top three college basketball spenders, and you are 5-2 now, and again, have lost the two teams that are actually capable of beating you, that's not great.
Yeah, not good at all, is how I would sum it up. All right, we sit here Tuesday, November 26th. Never too early to play our favorite in-season basketball game. So I ask you this question, Drew. NCAA, NIT, or nothing for K-State basketball this season?
Oh, if you're asking me 7 games in, I feel like the answer has to probably be NIT. Like, honestly, it was a tough debate right now between NIT and nothing with how the season has gone, because you just look at what they have left in the non-conference. Drake has been playing really, really well. St. John's is going to be a tough environment on the road. Wichita State is playing better. like there's no game left in the month of December outside of Arkansas Pine Bluff that I'm like, oh, K-State's for sure winning that game. So, and I think that that's kind of where you're at. And then you look Big 12 wise, I'm not sure if there's a team, and I would have put Arizona State in this category, but Arizona State's playing a little bit better and Oklahoma State's playing a little bit better. That I don't know if there's a team even Big 12 wise where I'm like, yep, K-State's for sure winning that just with how they've played. I mean, and I hate harping on this because it might have just been an off night shooting and that kind of contributes to it. But Mississippi Valley State, since they played K-State, they got beat by 44 to BYU, and they're probably going to lose again by 40 tonight to Utah. And Utah is not good at all. Yeah. And if Utah wins that game by 40 or more, you really start to think, okay, where do the wins in Big 12 play come from? Because right now, K-State is not a very good team.
Yeah, right now, KenPom only has two more definitive projected non-conference wins, and then only four in conference play. So right now, it only basically says K-State's got six more wins. Now, there is some variety to it, so overall, it projects out 15 and 16 and 7 and 13, which that would not be good enough for the NIT. Look, I think they'll be better than that, but the way they're playing right now, it'd be silly to say the NCAA tournament, because this thing, just because there are a couple of positives that you can hang on to and take from this, and also feel like I tweeted it after the Liberty game. I still think this team can get it figured out and be a really good basketball team because I felt really good about them going into the season. But we see that they have a lot of problems right now, and a handful of it doesn't even relate to the talent thing. Like, the talent on this team is not going to be K-State's problem. It's going to be, can the coaches put the guys in the right position to succeed, and can the guys buy in and listen and do the right things? And they all have to come together, and right now there's no reason to think that that is actually going to happen. You have to get a larger sample size to believe that. So I'm going to say nothing right now because I think with this kind of team, it's an NCAA or bust type of thing. I think Jerome Tang would understand that. Now, I would throw this out there too. If you go and look at the history at Baylor, I could be proven wrong on this side of things. Most of the time when they've had the opportunity, they took it in postseason play. 2009, they played in the NIT. 2013, after an Elite Eight season, they played in the NIT. And then they played in the NIT even in 2018. So, and that were second weekends in there that they sandwiched between NIT appearances. So I think it would probably be in Jerome Tang's DNA to take it because playing basketball in a lot of guys' eyes is better than not playing it. But I think it'd be tough taking this team to the NIT because in some ways you're probably a bigger laughing stock playing in the NIT with this team than not doing anything at all. So I would lean towards nothing right now. And I think that'd probably be the way to go. Unless obviously you think that you're going to retain a bunch of these guys. But if this team doesn't play in the NCAA tournament this year, some of these guys that are in here this year that even have eligibility remaining, I don't think you'd be too worried about keeping them moving forward. So it's a weird spot right now. K-State basketball isn't in a fun place, and they're going to have to put the pounding to Arkansas Pine Bluff this weekend, and then they get a big opportunity to swing things in a much different direction for that road trip to St. John's next weekend. So we'll have more basketball coverage throughout the weekend once that game gets underway. But the biggest note of the weekend is Saturday night in Ames, Iowa, K-State, Iowa State, Farmageddon. Both teams still alive for the Big 12 championship game. Iowa State seems to have a much more clear-cut path. I believe their odds are some of the best in the league right now. Them and Arizona State may even control their own destiny. So no matter really what happens
for the Big 12 email.
Yeah. The Big 12. I mean, if you thought, I don't know, they kind of struggled with tiebreakers last year and understanding them. you maybe you thought they'd have it figured out a little bit better this year. No, we're here in the last week of the regular season, and they said, oh yeah, Sunday we'll send out scenarios. They did not send out scenarios. What they basically sent us was, oh, for these teams to have a chance, this must happen, but it, you know, we don't know necessarily. Send us a big old list that says for Iowa State to play in the Big 12 title game, these are the scenarios that must happen. For Arizona State, for BYU, for Colorado, for K-State, for Baylor, for Texas, like, step up and do something here. So that was terrible on their part.
I knew that we were in trouble with the Big 12 email when the first thing that it said was, if two teams are tied at 7-2, that's who goes. It's like, yeah, no shit.
Yeah, like, great. Awesome.
You don't have to put that. And that, to me, that just proves that that is like what the league wants, because they don't want to have to go through, okay, this, mm-hmm. and this. So I think that they're hoping that there are two teams that are 7-2, and they're like, okay, those are the two.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. They want this to turn out in an easy manner and see how it goes. So here is the deal for how this would play out. Iowa State is basically in as long as they win this weekend. The only scenario in which I think it would kind of derail things for them would be if BYU lost to Houston, and so instead of a four-way tie at 7-2, it was a three-way with Colorado and Arizona State. Arizona State and Iowa State would be 2-3. Colorado would be the one there, so it would be Iowa State on the outside looking in. And then, obviously, there's a lot that K-State kind of needs to happen. You definitely need two of the three between Arizona State, Colorado, and Iowa State, obviously. And then BYU to lose, and then some other stuff. Baylor has to lose now because their conference win percentage of opponents played is better than K-State's because Oklahoma State sucks so bad. So I don't think that's something to worry about in this. K-State, though, has to worry about winning this game, number one, to buck a narrative. Chris Klieman is 2-3 against Iowa State, and the three losses have not been very good. They've been probably the three most, in those individual seasons, the most embarrassing performances that's taken place. 2020, you think of 2021, it's like, what is Breece Hall going to do? He's going to get the football on the very first play of the game. Boom, he's gone. And then obviously last year, the fiasco in the snow and everything that took place. So that's not great. You got to win this for momentum as well. And there are already a lot of people that were down going into the Cincinnati game, but you win this, you're a 9-3 football team, and while the losses are going to be giant kicks in the guts and what would have beens, 9-3 is still a pretty solid season. You're going to give yourself a chance to win a 10th game, and this carries a lot of momentum into next year. How this game goes is going to pretty much define the narrative heading into the game in week zero next season. Whoever wins it is going to have a lot of momentum, and they're going to feel like they've got the upper hand. And whoever loses it is going to have an off season of this feeling sucks, and now we get to turn around and lose to those guys again to start next season. At least that would be the fan base thoughts. So how do you feel about Farmageddon this week?
I think it's going to be an interesting game on a lot of accounts. Iowa State's defense hasn't looked as dominant in the last few weeks as they were early on in the season. And I think that that's kind of the really important thing to note here is Iowa State's defense has started to fall off a little bit. And they've still, even though that they won last weekend, they're still a team that's really leaking oil. And have really, it's two teams that haven't played well, but are still in contention and still could end up with the exact same record if K-State beats Iowa State, which is kind of wild to think about. Offensively for Iowa State, it is literally a three-man show with Rocco Becht, Jalen Noel, and Jaden Higgins. Like, those three guys are the guys that make the Iowa State offense go. Carson Hansen gets a lot of carries near the goal line, and that's why he has 11 touchdowns, but he doesn't even have 600 rushing yards this season. But Noel and Higgins are going to be two 1,000-yard receivers for Iowa State, and especially Higgins has kind of became the go-to guy this year with 77 catches, And over half the games this year, he has at least, I think it's six or more catches in at least half of the games. So you have to stop them because they're really the only threats receiving-wise that Iowa State has, because Higgins has 77 catches, Noel has 61, and then third is a guy that has 16 catches this year. So if you can find a way to limit those guys and make it so Iowa State can't run the ball, because Iowa State wasn't a very good running team last year and ran all over K-State. But if you can stop those two or limit them and stop the run, you're going to have a shot, because Iowa State also not playing well, K-State not necessarily playing well either. And this game is, I think, like a total coin flip on how it could go. Oh, you're on mute.
It's tough to tell with this K-State team in particular, just because of what we've seen from them and the fact that the struggles are not unrelated from the Houston to the Arizona State game, but also they're not totally connected to one another, where I do think they beat Houston if it's not raining the way it was. I think they're able to get by with how they would have thrown the ball. But they had some other problems against Arizona State. And that was just them getting beat in a game that really, I don't think you should, if you've got the motivation and the want behind it. And maybe they just weren't as locked in. Maybe they thought that being at home would kind of carry them in that situation. I mean, heck, most of us thought it was kind of a foregone conclusion that they could get back in it and just take care of business at home, and they didn't. So I think we saw kind of the reset against Cincinnati. There was all the talk going into it about, well, you know, now Avery's healthier. And that's something where I think people after the game would probably be like, ah, that's easy to say now that the game's over, you ran it with him, and instead of just putting it on, oh, look, Connor Riley, feet to the fire, had to do something. Before that game had even started, that was the narrative, though, going into it. I mean, before that, the very first snap from scrimmage, the ESPN broadcast, Brian Custer says that this is the healthiest he's been since that Colorado game. And so, and then instantly, boom, there he goes on the run. Chris Kleiman after the game, Avery Johnson after the game, they said that that was the best that he's been at in terms of being able to run the ball since the Colorado game. So if you have that element against Iowa State, that's helpful. They've been banged up in parts of their defense. There's every reason why K-State could show up and win this game. And there are reasons why I've thought Iowa State has been flawed at times this year. But given the circumstances of it being on the road at night in Ames, these road night games, K-State struggled in a little bit at times, and they can be tougher environments. And then on top of that, I just can't trust this K-State team right now. And I feel like in this circumstance, I can trust Iowa State just a little bit more. So right now, I would not give this to K-State. I think they're going to have to come out and do something special. They have to go beat Iowa State. I don't think Iowa State is going to hand this game over to them. Cincinnati is a team that could hand it to you. Now, K-State came out and they took the game from Cincinnati, but the Bearcats definitely helped them in some way to get there a little bit quicker. So this is a fascinating game, and we'll have more to talk about on it throughout the rest of the week and all the other stuff building up to it. But that's a good way to close out today and set the stage for more Farmageddon talk, because it'll come fast and furious over the next 3 days before Saturday when K-State hits the road for Ames. So any other thoughts, Drew? We are getting close to being 1 week away from signing day. Anything people need to know on that front?
I would say the only thing I really need to know is that there is still a pretty good chance that Lincoln Curran's up taking a visit to Oregon. And then the only other, like, I would say bigger target that's out there for K-State right now is Larry Porter, the receiver from Raytown, who took an official visit to K-State over the weekend. Also took a visit to KU yesterday. It's going to be pretty tight. It's a very contested battle right now. I would lean more towards KU winning out for him, but you know, he put out his commitment date as an until signing day, so there's a lot that could change in that week stretch. So we'll see how the class ends up. If you look right now, though, K-State's class ranked higher than the one that from last year, and last year was almost ranked as high as the 2023 one. So K-State's really building something as the years have gone on and recruiting a lot better.
Yeah, that's that is a good thing to note. K-State's sitting right now at 41st in the On3 rankings, and then if you go and you look at where that sits Big 12-wise, it's actually 5th in the league, which that's probably the top thing to compare to right now is where do you sit in the Big 12? Because we have gotten to the point in college football where unless it's a really high number, it's probably pretty ridiculous to compare in the national rankings because of the way that things are organized at this point in time. But K-State being 5th right now, the only teams ahead of them, TCU, Baylor, Houston, and Arizona State, 3 of those being Texas schools, should not be much of a surprise. And then obviously just trailing behind them, Texas Tech, West Virginia, and then UCF, Colorado, Utah, Arizona, Oklahoma State, Iowa State, KU, BYU, and Cincinnati. Some of the concerns there might be that, like, Colorado, we know, is always going to be low. They don't take a lot of high school guys. They only have 11 guys committed right now. But Arizona has 19 commitments at this point in time, and they're in 11th. Iowa State has 17 commitments. They're in 13th. BYU has 19 commits. They're in 15th. So those are just some of the things to kind of keep an eye on. And obviously some of those other ones, like UCF and West Virginia, they're going to have questions about coaching and other stuff that plays into it. So we'll have a lot more next week with signing day. We'll preview everything on Tuesday, kind of get you ready for it. And then on Wednesday, we'll be live at some point. That is a to-be-determined time, waiting on when Chris Klieman will have his press conference for signing day. But Drew and I will go live. We'll break down the entire class and then take any questions that you guys might have. And we'll try and get some interviews lined up next week as well. So that will do it for us today. Thank you for watching and listening to the KSO show. A big one for you on a Tuesday as Paradise Jam concludes and football is set for a massive game with Iowa State this weekend, going for win number 9, and also preventing the Cyclones from winning that long sought after 10th win. Somebody else may give it up to them, but you definitely don't want it to be you if you're K-State. Just like the Devin Neal all-time rushing record at KU. He only needed, 72 yards against K-State. Cats didn't let him get it, and he had to do it and wait, 2 weeks because of bye, and then whoever they played after that, I guess, was that Iowa State that they
– Iowa State.
Yeah.
It was like the second or third play of the game.
Yeah, so there you go. You've already prevented one rival from getting something good to happen. This one just might be a little bit tougher because it's black and white. You either win it and you do it, or you lose it and you don't do it. So we'll have more to preview with that throughout the week. Also, lots of content going up over at kstateonline.com right now. So head over to On3. You can find us there, and you can get a breakdown of everything going on with basketball, some recruiting scoops, and then plenty of other stuff that's going to come up throughout the week. The plan that DY has for us this week, the schedule, it's a little insane. So loads of content that will continue to kind of trickle out in the days leading up, and a lot to be thankful for everybody heading into Thanksgiving. One of those would not be the Dallas Cowboys I'm going to watch. Although people are talking, Drew, back in the hunt with that win over the Commanders.
No,
watch out. I mean, the Giants this week at home, Thanksgiving, that's an automatic win. It's not going to happen. In certain years, I think it actually might be possible depending on things, but they do suck. And I'm just glad that Jerry Jones at least seems like he's not going to hire Deion Sanders as their next coach. If that happens, today he was talking about extensions for Mike McCarthy being possible. So that'd be the dumbest thing in the world, but nobody cares about that. I'm starting to not even care about it. So we'll get out of here. Have a good day, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow. So for Drew Galloway, I'm Mason Voth. Thanks for watching and listening to K-State Online.